Dave Radio, Fridays at noon on CITR.
Wow, wow, Dave, you're so sway. Oh, Dave, I like your shave.
And we're the Daves. I'm David Badanek.
I'm Dave Campbell.
I'm Dave Frank.
We're the Daves.
And you're listening to CITR FM 101.9.
CITR Radio.
And these are the Daves of our lives.
Let's go!
It is Friday, the 11th of September, 2020, and this is Dave Radio with Radio Dave on the radio. We're broadcasting live on CITR 101.9 FM and streaming on the World Wide Web at CITR.ca from an undisclosed location somewhere on the unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh people. On the program today, we have finally mastered what every other broadcaster in the country has been doing for the past 6 months. Yes, we have actual interviews. We're going to talk about live comedy in Vancouver with Nina Wilder, and Winnipeg filmmaker Sean Garrity tells us about his new feature now showing at the International Village. It's called I Propose We Never See Each Other Again After Tonight. It's the Radio for Shut-Ins version of Vancouver's go-to hour for local independent theater, film, and music, and it starts right now. Don't touch that dial. How do you like that? After 6 months in confinement, we finally figured out how to record interviews on this show again. I missed it. I tried it once on my smartphone and realized you can't record a telephone conversation on it. But we've finally gotten around to doing something with Google Meet, and I think it worked. So we'll see how it goes. Our first interview is with Nina Wilder. Nina loves to laugh, and she loves to make other people laugh. This local comedian is part of a new online venture called Vancouver Comedy Live, which you can find at vancouvercomedy.ca. It's a website that was dreamed up by our very own Tanner McColeman, who is CITR's resident technical wizard and a pretty funny comic himself. And he has pulled my butt out of the fire numerous times to keep this show on the air. Anyway, with Tanner's help, we finally figured out how to record interviews from home, and we reached Nina Wilder at her home in Vancouver.
So, well, I am doing a whole bunch of productions for Vancouver, for live comedy in Vancouver.
Right.
One of the neater shows that I'm doing is called Comedy Snacks, and okay. That's live streamed from Havana Theater on Commercial Drive.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that was organized by another comedian on the scene, Tanner, who you know.
Yeah.
And what he did was he produced this show, and he also produces another show produced by another comedian, Morris Bartlett, on the same channel. So it's something kind of never before seen in the Vancouver comedy industry, where you get two separate indie shows that are sort of on the same channel that
yeah.
Tanner helped create. So we're getting audiences now online and also in person, but each show kind of supports the other by being on the same channel. So that's
mm-hmm.
probably one of the more fun projects that I'm involved with.
So is this something that started because of the situation with the coronavirus?
Absolutely, yeah. So
yeah.
When the shutdown happened, it's interesting. Everyone has a different response to the shutdown. Some people chose
yeah.
it as a time to kind of recoup and lay low. Others shifted their projects. And then what happened initially first was Morris Bartlett moved his monthly meltdown show to be this twice a week. All the comedians zoom in from their living room, and it's just this sort of ragtag variety comedy show full of very weird content, which is is totally up his alley for that show. So I was watching for a couple weeks, and then I was on it for a few times as well. And Morris proposed to add to this channel that they were creating. So I started hosting Zoom shows, Comedy Snacks. And the original idea was that we would just lean into the Zoom format. So we made use of this, the screen. We'd do like puppetry. We'd do sort of close and personal sort of comedy. And I did like, I did a fake cooking show with like making fun of the fact that grocery stores were selling out of everything. So you had to make like how to make recipes with the last three ingredients. End of the world.
Let's
cooking.
See what we've got here. Well, there's a can of beans.
Unfortunately, I had to eat hummus with popcorn. It was very interesting. But, you know.
I've done that. I have done that.
Perks of the job in my mind.
Exactly. Well, how long have you been doing comedy?
I've been doing comedy more seriously for the last year and a half. And then I jumped quickly into producing my own shows just simply by nature of there's only so many shows in Vancouver. You've got two comedy clubs, and then you've just got your indie comedy scene, which is great, but still very much up and coming. Like, it's nothing compared to scenes like New York, where you can go to like six shows a night. So I produce shows in restaurants. And of course, as soon as the shutdown happened, all of them were closed and shut down. But slowly and surely, after Comedy Snacks, we had a couple come back. But of course, under all new guidelines, and all the performers now, this is a normal thing in the comedy scene, all the performers have to come with mic covers. So we provide mic covers for every comedian. So the condom jokes are endless.
Of course. So what's the experience like for the audience then? Are they spaced out? And
definitely, yeah. So just as per restaurant standards, so what we do is we have to, as soon as we make sales either online or they come at the door, we have to make sure we know where they're going so they can sit down and just kind of not move. So, and then space out the appropriate seating, because the social bubbles can be different amounts. So we have to be a bit more strategic with where they're placed. Or in Havana actually has a really nice setup. I got to give kudos to Alistair, who runs Havana Theater. What he does is he creates a reservation form, which you fill out and you tell the number of guests you have, and that he actually plans the seating in advance with your names and tapes out and measures out, because that's in an actual black box theater.
Yeah. And it's pretty flexible. You can move things around and put you in groups pretty easily. Yeah.
Exactly. But I don't think everyone knows. I don't think everyone expects that when coming to a comedy, hear comedy show, and you think like loud, boisterous people walking around laughing. So it can be this very scary. It must sound scary from the outside, but it is definitely following COVID-19 safety procedures, for sure.
Yeah, and I mean that's got to give you grist for all kinds of material as well.
Oh God, yeah. There's a lot of because everyone's dealt with the quarantine very differently. So there's a lot of people who talk about just their and of course a few comedians actually caught COVID-19. So now that they're cleared by Fraser Health, they're back on talking about all their experiences. And
oh yeah,
I'm like, So it's. Yeah, it's interesting too, because if you had watched comedy before the shutdown and versus now, I would say 80% of the people have changed just by nature of people having either underlying health conditions that have now chosen not to come back for a while, or just simply actually change of heart too, because there's a lot of people that have just been impacted emotionally by this time and they've just wanted to shut down, and starting to see inklings of people starting to come back, but otherwise it's a very...
You're talking about the audience, not the performers.
The performers.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So wow. They're just, it was very individual in how people responded to just sort of being quarantined, being exposed to COVID-19. A lot of people struggle with anxiety around germs, so there's a... It sucks, man. I would not want to be a germaphobe at this time. Like, brutal.
No, you feel justified.
Oh,
see,
yeah,
I told you.
That's true. Like, I told you, sanitize that. Like,
see, now everyone's behaving like me.
Yeah, exactly. As long as you're not washing your hands in bleach, we're okay.
That's right. Well, tell me. I'm intrigued by what you were just saying about how the situation has changed the performers. Mm-hmm. So tell me about how it's affected you.
For me, I was doing a couple. I was organizing and producing two weekly shows originally, but by and large, it was hard to get performers because there's just so many shows to go to, and there were so many. The audience was spread really thin, and yada yada. But now it's interesting because with so many shows shut down, there's only a few of us producing left, and I mean it's starting to come back, but. There's a lot of new performers and new faces I've never seen before, and certain places that weren't popular are popular now, and it's almost like just topsy-turvy. And of course Yuk Yuk's is still closed, mm-hmm. So you've got all these performers that are just hungry for performing time, and not that they weren't hungry before, like
yeah, but now it's just become more limited
so yeah. But and then I think restaurants too are more excited at the prospect of hosting a comedy show, barring COVID-19 safety stuff, mm-hmm. Just because they need people. Oh my God, they're desperate for people. No wonder, because they're cut just down so much capacity. So, and we just had a word today that Dr. Bonnie Henry limited liquor sales past 10 p.m. for all bars and restaurants.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. So that doesn't affect us too much, because usually shows run from 8 to 9:30, but
yeah.
But that certainly does, I'm sure, hit a bottom line again for restaurants. Like, oh boy. Like, so. Yeah.
All right. So now when we started, I asked about Vancouver Comedy Live. So that's mm-hmm. the website, right?
That's the website. So that's what Tanner created. Initially, it was just that we had all the comedians on Zoom doing it from their living room, and it was streamed out to YouTube in a cool format where you could kind of see everyone's little squares, like a Hollywood squares, but out of hell.
like a CNN discussion.
Yeah. With no intelligence. No. And then what's cool about that is that you could actually see your comments live, and they could, and the comedians could see your comments. So there could be an interaction still.
Oh, you can heckle.
Of course, you can always get heckled. But fortunately for us, we can keep talking without getting into a brawl. And I think this impacted a lot of comedians too, was that you can't hear laughter. So that was a big turnoff for a lot of comedians on the stage. Whereas me, I'm just like, you know, you go to an open mic, you don't get laughter.
it's par for the course.
I am still seeking validation from the ether. Thank you. So there's definitely that. But then what that transformed to was that Tanner noticed that one show had a certain amount of or certain audience members keep coming to it, and the other show had certain audience members keep coming to it, and then they suddenly watched each other's shows. So we started to see our audiences grow simply by, oh, what else is on this channel? So Tanner created this Vancouver Comedy Live, where it's, I think it's YouTube, Twitch, and then that the website, which is, I just think, is so neat. And I would love to sort of grow that, because Vancouver comedy is not really, it's not really on the global scene per se, but that's something to put it on that global scene. So it kind of opens us up a little bit, and it supports each other's shows, which is super nice, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's very exciting.
Yeah. It was sounds really like, neat, you know, unique.
You're making hay. That's great.
Making hay.
When can we see you live next time?
So we've got for online, we've got Comedy Snacks every Thursday at 8 p.m., which is kind of a variety show, but it's a lot of stand-up. And
so that's streamed live on the VancouverComedy.ca.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
And we do take donations for that, and all the donations goes right back into the show, i.e. the performers and Tanner's, the infrastructure of it. And then we've got my company, Laugh Wild Comedy, which produces the shows, that one and the two others. I've got King's Comedy, which is in Kitsilano, Tuesdays at 8 o'clock, and then Wednesdays
at the King's Head.
At the King's Head, which is actually a very historic venue for comedy. Apparently that was one of the original places that you saw live comedy way back in the day when Robin Williams used to drop in.
Yeah.
Or that was at the Urban Well, but nearabouts.
No, he was at the Well, but I do remember seeing comedy at the King's Head in the 80s.
So. Yeah. So it's kind of cool coming back there and sort of relearning all the history of it and seeing people come in there. It's like, I remember this. I used to get drunk in my university days. And I'm like, how did you pass? Like, and then our most recent edition is on Davy Street. That's Wednesdays at 8 o'clock, and that's at Neptune Fusion and Bar. And that's a brand new restaurant. And it's got a very nice layout. Again, this is really important for people worried about safety. And the tables are very much spread out. And what's cool about the King's Head too is that they've got different levels, so they can. Yeah. It was actually quite easy for them to reopen because everything's in booths and on separate, very separate places. So that worked out well for both of us.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, thanks very much for telling me all about this. It's very exciting.
Yeah. Thanks for the interview. Yeah. It was great.
All right. Take care. Thanks. Cool. Bye.
Thanks, Dave. Bye.
If you want to know more, you can go to VancouverComedy.ca. Now it's time for some music. This is a new release from Brutal Poodle. United Players is up and running again after having to close in January for renovations and repairs, only to reopen just in time to close again because of the coronavirus. The Jericho Art Center is finally presenting their first performance of 2020. It's the United Players production of Taddy Hennessy's 100 Words for Snow. Rory's dad has just died. He may not have been the coolest parent ever. He was a geography teacher at her school. But the sudden nature of his death has hit her incredibly hard. The adventures and treasure hunts they used to go on when she was younger have all come flooding back, as she remembers that he would have been a real explorer if he'd had the chance. The two of them even talked about taking a trip to the Arctic together someday. But why can't they still do it? Her dad's death doesn't have to stop them. She can just take his ashes. Clearly more affected by grief than she's letting on, Rory sets off in the footsteps of all the dead beardy explorers before her to get Dad to the North Pole, before Mom finds out they're gone. Directed by friend of the show Tamara McCarthy, the play features BIPOC actor Hannah Joy, embodying a very feisty young woman who sets off to the wilds of the Arctic in this tale of feminine derring-do, beating the odds in a melting world, and all with a twist of fun. 100 Words for Snow is playing at the Jericho Art Center from September 11th to October 4th, Thursday through Saturday, and Sundays at 2 in the afternoon. The show is also available for online viewing on those dates. And because seating will be limited because of physical distancing, patients are encouraged to book early to avoid disappointment. You can find out all about it at www.unitedplayers.com. And warning, this play does include explicit sexual content.
I got a stack of records here, a stack of records there. I got records scattered all over everywhere, but I'm looking for one.
Discorder Magazine has been supporting independent music for over 30 years, and it keeps on living by joining efforts with local music supporters such as Vinyl Records. You can find a selection of Vinyl Records' featured albums on the back cover of Discorder and can support your favorite local bands and artists by purchasing their records. For more information on their vast selection of new, used, and rare music, go to vinylrecords.ca.
In the context of Vancouver's opioid crisis, CITR would like to take a moment to share some harm reduction strategies.
Try not to do drugs alone. When going out, let friends know what drugs you're taking and make sure someone has an naloxone kit. If you're able to, get your drugs tested before taking them.
Avoid mixing opioids with alcohol or stimulants. Remember that opioids can include painkillers prescribed by a doctor, and it's possible for any drugs to be contaminated with opioids.
Learn the signs of opioid overdose, which include, but are not limited to, unresponsiveness or unconsciousness, inability to speak, breathing that is slow, erratic, or has stopped completely, heartbeat that is slow, erratic, or has stopped completely, skin tone that has turned blue or gray, choking or gurgling sounds.
If you think someone is overdosing, call 911 immediately. Start rescue breathing and administer naloxone if you have it. You cannot get in trouble for being on drugs, so always call 911 in an emergency.
For more information about naloxone kits and training, visit towardtheheart.com.
Thank you and stay safe.
Ah, nature. Sustainability is so important to preserving this for the future. If only there was a place I could learn more about it, contribute to environmentally conscious projects, and develop my leadership skills with like-minded people.
Oh wait, there is! Come and join UBC's Sustainability Ambassadors Program, open to all undergraduate and graduate students at UBC. Contribute your time and gain valuable work experience in sustainability. Apply online at sustain.ubc.ca/ambassadors before February 10th.
A new romantic comedy from Winnipeg is playing in Vancouver right now. I Propose We Never See Each Other Again After Tonight is the latest from writer-director Sean Garrity, the man who brought his films like My Awkward Sexual Adventure. It tells the story of Iris, a young Philippine-Canadian, and a Mennonite called Simon. In the depths of Winnipeg winter, when everyone covers their faces in scarves and balaclavas to protect them from the cold, Iris mistakes Simon for someone she knows. This initiates an energetic, fun, sexy affair, complete with all the passion and intensity of 20-something infatuation.
But when it starts to feel like real love, Simon gets freaked out and decides to take a step back to get perspective by leaving town for a few weeks. When Iris goes looking for him and starts meeting other people in Simon's life, she finds out she doesn't know him anywhere near as well as she thought she did. I spoke to writer-director Sean Garrity from his home in Winnipeg, and we started by talking about what makes this rom-com uniquely Canadian.
I'm interested in setting up something that feels like a very familiar rom-com. Like in a lot of the films that I've done, I love kind of dressing it up. We sort of say maple syrup in a Coca-Cola can. So it looks like a rom-com, like a standard American sort of rom-com. But then when you get into it, I'm very interested in painting a little bit outside the genre lines. And, you know, in this one, with the mixed cultures, in addition to, you know, we do some sort of time slipping in the third act, and the ending isn't, I guess, precisely what people would exactly expect. And I think it's fun as a filmmaker to, you know, bring the audience in with a certain set of genre expectations and then hopefully surprise them a little bit so that it's not a completely predictable ride while still hopefully being funny and cute and fun.
Yeah, we still want that. Now, how long ago did you shoot this? It looks fairly recent.
Yeah, we did it. Not this past winter, but the winter before. We actually shot it. We started in January, and my intention originally was to shoot it just in the winter, because of course, you know, Winnipeg. Well, most of the prairies, I think, people think of us as synonymous with winter. And there's a real beauty to the winter that I loved and tried to capture with this film. But we had an interesting hiccup in that my main actor, Hera Nalum, was actually not able to do the film on the timeline that we needed her to do it. So she was in a play at the same time as we were shooting. And we offered her the lead, and she said no. and I was like, but wait a minute, but it's a film. What do you mean no? And because she came out to the audition for a smaller part, right? And I was like, but if you're in a play, could I convince you to leave the play? I mean, it's a film. It's going to do a lot better for you in the long run. It's, you know, it's more money. It's, but she was like, nope, I promised them I'd do it. So I'm going to do it. I mean, unless you guys want to shoot on weekends or something, there's no way that I can be in your movie.
Mm-hmm.
So I went and talked to the crew and said, you know, here's a weird idea. What if we shot like weekends and stuff, guys? And I thought they'd all walk out on me, or I'd be forced to choose between my crew and my lead actor. But luckily for me, Winnipeg had a whole bunch of back-to-back movies and TV shows. And there were a lot of crew people who really hadn't seen a whole bunch of their families. And they said, actually, that'd be nice. So we had the bonus of being able to kind of watch winter, because we shot the film chronologically, watch winter turn into spring over the course of the movie, which served as a nice metaphor, if maybe a little obvious, for a ton of stuff that sort of goes on in the relationship between my two leads.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you're able to make it work out. I haven't seen the whole film itself, just the trailer, but just from watching the trailer, I can tell that Hera Nalum is she's a winner. She looks delightful.
She's really, really something. And she was, it was that kind of magic story that you hear a lot, that when she came into the audition room and we auditioned her, we were, not just me, but my co-producer and the casting director, we just, you know, the second she walked out of the room, we were like, well, obviously that's her. Like, there was no question, you know? I actually, the first intent to cast her as the lead came right then and there when I raced out of the casting room to get her while she was putting on her boots and stuff to go outside of the building to stop her and say, hey, would you play the lead? And that was the first time she said no.
Yeah. She was just at the audition.
That's right. She was at the audition. She got the lead and she was already. So yeah. And then there's a long story of how I had to go after her three more times to offer her the lead before we were the ones who had to change our schedules.
How close is she to your original concept when you were writing the story and writing the character? Was she someone that you imagined, or did it sort of come out of left field for you?
No, she was a variation on what I imagined that character to be, actually. And she brought a real kind of vulnerability to the character that I hadn't initially imagined. Hera is the kind of actor who just has a charisma that just lets you in. Like, you always feel like you're in on what she's feeling and what she's going through. And there's a kind of a real openness to the way that she deals with her emotions that really was not part of how I envisioned that character. But when Hera kind of presented that possibility to us in the audition room, I got very excited because, you know, I come in with one part as the director writer. This is one part of the character and the actor brings the other piece. So you're kind of, I feel like in an audition room, you're constantly reimagining what your character could be because every actor brings a different set of possibilities. And so it was that combination of what I thought and what Hera brought that made me go, oh, wow, that's totally who my lead needs to be.
Great. Tell me a little bit about your male lead, Christian Jordan.
Christian is a very, very focused, clever. There's a lot of Simon in him. A lot of the main character is sort of in Christian, but he brings a real kind of aloofness and a coolness to him that was a really interesting take on how I had imagined that character as well. Because I imagined Simon as a little more closed. He's a character who has some secrets. He's a character who's a little hard to get to know. And certainly one of the central conflicts, you know, like in a lot of rom-coms, between my two leads is that she's very, very open and she's very, very kind of willing to go. And there's something about him that's always held a little bit in reserve. And the interpretation that Christian brought was kind of an aloof coolness. Like, he's sort of even though he's playing this kind of suburban Mennonite who's from a small Mennonite town, he brings this real sense of hipsterness to that role. And not like a hipster like you kind of know like in downtown Toronto, but like a combination of that character and a kind of hipness that makes him into somebody who I don't think I've seen before on the screen. And I really loved the way that he was able to interpret what I imagined, and then the way they work together, I had three possibilities for that role. I mean, I auditioned a lot of people, but it came down to three people, and so I'd already cast Hera, and I had Hera come in and play off of Christian and the two other guys. And certainly when I saw Christian and Hera together, I thought that's obviously my couple. But I also wanted to make sure that Hera was on board with that because it's a long shoot, so I sort of said to her, how did you feel about those three guys? And Hera was so funny because she didn't want to lose anybody the gig. So she was very quick to say, oh, they're all great. They're all three of them. They were great. And I was like, yeah, but did you have a preference? And she was like, oh, no, I couldn't pause. And I kept pushing her to get something. And at one point she said, well, I'll confess that in the audition with Christian, there was a moment where he turned around and looked at me and I looked up into his blue eyes and I just felt like I was going to melt. I was like, well, there it is then.
There you go.
There, yeah. That's our couple.
Wonderful. Yeah. So the film's been playing. It opened in Vancouver last week, and it's playing in some other centers around the country?
That's right. We actually just got news today that we're extended. So we are extended for a fourth week in Winnipeg, which is where we started way back in August, which is a first for me. And we got extended in Toronto, and we got extended in Vancouver. We're playing at the International Village there. And we are opening this Friday in Calgary and in Edmonton.
So you said the experience was a first for you. Where does this film sit in your career? How long have you been a filmmaker?
I've been making movies for 20 years, and this is my eighth theatrically released feature.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of an odd one only because it kind of crashed with COVID. So, you know, the usual approach is you make a film and you take it out to film festivals and you play it at a bunch of film festivals and try and get some early press and press, you know, pull quotes that you can use for your theatrical release. But of course, there were no festivals this year. They all got canceled.
Yeah.
So we had to kind of scramble and think of a plan B with it. And, you know, what happened that was kind of interesting was when theaters opened up again in July, albeit with all sorts of restrictions and restricted audiences and, you know, intense cleanings between screenings and stuff. Mongrel Media, my distributor, and I had a conversation where we sort of said, you know, is this a bit of an opportunity maybe that that because the usual enemy of Canadian film in the cinemas is Hollywood. And Hollywood releases so much product, and a lot of the times they will make a deal with, you know, with the big theater chains and sort of say, okay, I know that you guys want this Avengers film or whatever it is. We will ask you to also therefore take these five other movies. Right. And we just kind of get muscled out, and there's no room for Canadian films, you know, in our own cinemas. And right now we're experiencing this weird moment where Hollywood is kind of holding everything back. And in a lot of cinemas, they're playing, you know, a DVD of Pluto Nash or something. Mm-hmm. And so we had this weird experience where I was able to talk to Cineplex and sort of say, I know you only ever open Canadian films on one screen per city. What if in Winnipeg we opened it on three screens? And, you know, Mongrel was like, well, you can't ask Cineplex that. Of course, everyone knows that Canadian films only open on one screen. But I was like, but we'll ask because we have one screen at the moment. And if they say no, we still have one screen. So go ask them.
Yeah.
And Mongrel did ask, and Cineplex kind of shrugged and said, yeah, sure. I mean, who knows what people are going to go see? We don't know anything. And so we opened on three screens in Winnipeg, August 21st, kind of to show Cineplex that people would go, and quickly rocketed into Canada's top five films, Canadian films at the box office.
Hey!
Yeah, with only two screens in Winnipeg. They eventually put us on a third screen here.
Great.
But yeah, so that was a great way to start, and kind of gave us a little bit of muscle to go back to Cineplex and say, okay, well now, how about, you know, Toronto and Vancouver and Calgary and Edmonton, and we're opening at a couple other cinemas beyond that. I think it feels at the moment limited only by the number of actual DCPs, so screening copies of the movie that I have in my possession. I mean, I can only show at so many places.
What about home viewing, streaming, that kind of thing?
Yeah, we're going to do that starting in November. And then it's going on Crave, I think, 2 months after that. So possibly end of December or early January. And it, again, COVID is kind of making the future after that a bit of a mystery. Usually we would go to Air Canada, but, you know, will there be an Air Canada? Like, I mean, I'm...
Yeah.
So
I got to tell you, the trailer fooled me a little bit because, you know, the opening shot is them pushing the car, and they're all, their faces are covered in scarves, and I thought they were wearing masks because of COVID. So, oh, this is timely.
That would be timely. I think I would have beaten everyone to the punch on that one. No, maybe it was one of the reasons that we didn't get hit very hard when it came in March, because we still all had our faces covered and were, you know, wearing all sorts of layers to keep ourselves distant from one another, just as a kind of a normal day-to-day Winnipeg lifestyle thing.
That's right. Well, I'm eager to see the whole film. Like I said, I've just seen the trailer, and it looks great. And folks in Vancouver here can see it at International Village. And for another four weeks?
It'll be at International Village. I mean, Cineplex gives us a week by week. So they've just extended it for another week, meaning we're there until September 17th, I guess.
Is the
following Thursday.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then we'll see, you know, after the weekend if they're going to keep us around for another week or not.
Great. Well, thanks very much for spending some time to talk to us about it, and best of luck and all success.
Thank you very much, sir. Thank you.
I Propose We Never See Each Other Again After Tonight is playing until September 17th at International Village Cinema. Go see it and support Canadian independent film, and who knows, you might even like it.
Keep your friends close, but your enemies closer.
We don't have many enemies here at CITR, but we do like to keep our friends close. And when you become a member of CITR, our friends are your friends. So join CITR today to get discounts at Audiopile, Red Cat, Vinyl Records, Hooked on Phono, Rufus Guitar and Drum Shop, Tapestry Music, The Cinematheque, Kerner's Pub, Stormcrow, The Pint, and Fortune Sound Club. For more info, visit CITR.ca/friends.
The world is a better place because of Kim Kardashian's empire,
Cheetos,
fleece material,
and Discorder.
It's a local independent music magazine from CITR.
Which means that we can print whatever we heckin' want.
album and live show reviews, interviews with artists, and sweet illustrations grace our pages.
And even you, listener, can contribute. Just visit citr.ca/discorder/contribute. You can grab it around town or read it at discorder.ca.
Forever local and forever free.
We'll be right back.
Presentation House Theater launches their 2021 season with Overdale, a live play reading with Nicola Cavendish and David King. This fuzzy memory romantic comedy by David King will be live on stage for three performances, and if you can't make it to the theater, there is a live stream performance on September 13th. The story goes like this. When Jill and Ben met on a BC ferry from Langdale to Horseshoe Bay, they are surprised to discover that they grew up in the same area of Winnipeg, among many of the same people. The pair reminisce about the time in their lives when they seem to always just miss each other and imagine the alternate paths their lives could have taken had they met. It's happening Saturday, 2:30 and 7:30, and then Sunday at 2:30, and that show will be a live stream performance as well. You can find out more by going to phtheatre.org. That's phtheatre.org. And also on that site, you will get all the details on the Presentation House protocol that helps keep you safe during COVID-19.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is Monday.
From 1 to 3 p.m.
Who is this guy? Does he have a name? Let me know where he's from.
From parts unknown.
My name's Chris Horrific.
You always wanted his character to be bigger than life.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is without question the greatest sports and entertainment event of all time. Be a part of it Monday
from 1 to 3 p.m.
The Parts Unknown Show on 101.9 CITR. Sometimes cosmoses collide.
The Parts Unknown!
Break your fingers!
So that's our show. Thanks for spending your lunch hour with us. Music today was by Brutal Poodle, Puppet Mouth, Elastic Stars, and Summer Eyes. And special thanks to our guests, Nina Wilder of Vancouver Comedy Live and Sean Garrity, director of I Propose We Never See Each Other Again After Tonight, now playing at International Village. Remember, if you want to keep in the know about theater happenings and not happenings in these wacky times, you can check out Theater Wire and Colin Thomas's Fresh Sheet. And if you missed any or all of today's show or want to relive glorious moments in the past, you can check out our podcast archives at CITR.ca, and you can also find us on player.fm. And remember to like, share, and subscribe, because Sharon deserves it. Stick around, because Audrey's up next with Too Dreamy, followed by Betty Crespin at 2, and our very own star on the BC Entertainment Walk of Fame, Nardwar the Human Serviette, at 3:30. Dave Radio will return next week at this same time. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM.
In Vancouver.
It's like having a clown in your head.